Exmark makes the mowers that care for the lawns that set the stage for the backyard life. As the commercial mowers more landscape pros trust, Exmark mowers get you on and off the lawn without compromising cut quality, comfort, or reliability. Exmark, official mowers of the backyard life, starting at $29.99. Learn about the available finance offers and check them out today at The Mower Shop, 7400 Preston Highway, Louisville, Kentucky, 502-969-6433.
Make your life better with a new job at UPS. Join Team Louisville as a warehouse worker, earn $14.50 per hour plus a $175 weekly bonus for some shifts. Search and apply now at upsjobs.com/Louisville. That's upsjobs.com/Louisville.
Bet River Sportsbook has supercharged its iOS app. Download the update today from the Apple App Store and see the difference for yourself. Must be 21 or over to play. Playable only in Indiana. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-9-WITH-IT.
Get ready for Sports Talk with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Dan and Mike.
How about that cream? Just gold. I mean, he's going for the cycle here today, isn't he? Baseball cycle?
What
single, that, double, triple, homer?
Exactly. What did that texter say about John Denver?
Oh, this is a good
one. He's a folk guy.
This is a good one. Yeah, the texter got you on that one, big boy. Yeah, so Crean is visiting with somebody again. I don't think we're not due for Kyle Tucker until bottom of the hour, but he's working hard. UofL still hasn't hired their assistants to fill that slot.
Yep,
and I think Borzello was telling us about how, in essence, recruiting has changed instead of being able to identify these players early because of COVID and watch them in all this action. And the NCAA has a no visit, no contact rule until, I think, June 1. So everything is done with the Zoom.
Yeah, and they keep pushing that date back. I've mentioned before that my grandson has signed to go to University of Hawaii on a baseball scholarship, and he and Rick, his father, took a trip over there because Ben had never been to Hawaii, but they couldn't visit with any of the coaches.
And they actually went over and looked at the school, huh? That's cool.
Yeah. And they were practicing, but they couldn't even go into the baseball stadium. They had to stand out in center field and watch it through the fence. And so it keeps getting pushed back, and you're right. Now it's June 1st before the contact can happen.
Now, were they quarantined over there after they landed?
No
quarantine.
Now they were going to go, the whole family. My daughter Sheridan and Ben and Rick and Addie were all going Thanksgiving to Hawaii and
vacation.
For Ben to see the school. But at that point, they were still quarantined. If you went to Hawaii, you had to wait 14 days before you flew back to the mainland. So they canceled that trip. But then it was later that just Ben and Rick went and were able to fly right back. I think they were there for 3 days.
Oh, that's not bad. Yeah. And they were leaving from Denver, so they weren't leaving from the East Coast.
Right.
Yeah. So he's a pitcher.
He is. He is. It's been a lot of fun. Last summer, when, you know, everybody was scared to death. Well, I guess you still should be scared to death of COVID and didn't know exactly. That was the only thing that the only fun we had. We got to he was in tournaments in Birmingham, Atlanta twice, and Cincinnati. So we drove to those places and had a chance to see him pitch over the summer. But it's
righty or lefty?
He's right. Right-handed. He's about 6'5", bright red hair. I don't know where
I met him when he was young. Yeah. In 12, we were all at the track, and you had him out there. And He was a little pup.
That was during the
NCAA,
tournament in New Orleans, and he had Sheridan take a magic marker and do a unibrow for him for going to the games for after Anthony Davis. So here he is with this bright red hair and a black unibrow across his eyes. But it's been fun to watch him pitch. And he throws the ball. He's up to 91, 92, and has good control. And it's been fun to watch him.
Is his high school a baseball type high school?
He goes to Valor Christian High School in Denver.
Are they known for baseball?
Well, no, they're more known for football.
Really?
Yeah. The McCaffrey boys all went to Valor. Okay. In fact, Ed, who played for the Broncos, was a wide receiver. He was the football coach at Valor for a while, and he has since moved on. I think he's at Northern Colorado now. In fact, one of his sons, I think it was the son that went to Michigan. I mean, that whole McCaffrey family, fabulous, fabulous football players.
And obviously Luke McCaffrey now transferred from Nebraska to Louisville.
Football player.
Exactly, yeah. I think he's the youngest one, Crean. The youngest one went to Nebraska and is now transferred to Louisville. The next
Dylan McCaffrey.
Yeah, and the next youngest one went to Michigan, and now he's transferred back to Northern Colorado to play for Ed. And, of course, Christian is, you know, one of the all-time great running backs in the NBA. I knew Benjamin used to play basketball at Valor when he was just in, like, junior high. And I saw Christian McCaffrey work out one time. And of course, he was all-state. Won the state 220. Just a fabulous
flyer, man. You got to be a flyer there.
And I was watching him work out one time when Ben was playing, and in a hallway he had set up high hurdles, and part of his workout was he would hop like a bunny on 2 feet, hop like a bunny, and hop over the high hurdle. And then hop 3 or 4 times. Then he had another high hurdle. The sweat was just pouring off of him. I knew he was going to be good because he was not only very talented, but, I mean, what a work ethic he has.
He had hops. Hey, didn't one of the boys play basketball at Duke?
He went to Duke. The oldest McCaffrey went to Duke, and he was a wide receiver. I didn't realize he played.
I thought there was a basketball player, college basketball player in that mix. So I may have the wrong family.
The oldest one went to Duke, and he played in the NFL a few years, but didn't have near the success that Christian is having.
Well, speaking of success in moving around and family and all that stuff now, Crean, we have Jeff Borzello on the Franklin Kid, Armand Franklin. He has moved from the Hurrying Hoosiers to UVA. And, that's a little bit of a strange. Franklin was a highly regarded high school player, was he not?
He was a 4-star, and he came in, didn't do much his freshman year, but was really, really good last year for IU. He was probably after Jackson Davis, their second-best player, really their only outside threat. And now he goes from playing the pack line defense with Archie Miller to playing a better version of the back line defense with Tony Bennett. So I think that's a really good fit for him at Virginia. And here's the Borzello Club.
You got it.
They clearly need scorers. I mean, outside of assuming, you know, let's say Trey Murphy ends up going pro, they've already lost Jay Huff. They've already lost Sam Hauser. You know, their leading scorer coming back is Kihei Clark after about 9 a game. And outside of him, I think their second leading scorer would be Reese Beekman, who averaged about 4 points a game. So, you know, now you're getting Armand Franklin, double-figure scorer, really good shooter from the perimeter. He can step in and play 30-plus minutes a game right off the bat. You know, they're heavily involved for East Carolina transfer Jaden Gardner, one of the most productive players in college basketball the last 3 years in the AAC, averaging about 18-8 last season. And I think Virginia is probably the favorite for him. He's supposed to commit tonight. And so I think Virginia really quickly has kind of revamped their roster, added a lot of proven scorers. And Franklin, you know, I think that in a, you know, in on a team and a system, and you know, he'll be able to play just so much more. They have, you know, a few more floor stretchers, you know, like Louisville, Indiana lacked in that last year. But I think that Armon Franklin will get a little more space, get a few more shots at Virginia, and I think it's a really good addition for them, and I think it's a really good spot for him.
The transfer portal, much like to work in the transfer portal, it's much like, Dan, what you did and I was involved with in a couple stops in the NBA as far as the draft and evaluating those players. And by the way, speaking of the NBA, did you see where Murray does have a torn ACL?
Oh, no.
Yeah, just came across that. Yeah. Thought I'd tell you that because we were talking about Jamal.
So that's the rest of this season,
yeah.
at least.
Yeah. Yeah. So I want to talk to you, but we got a caller. I want to talk to you about how you guys, when you were in Denver, structured and who structured, who oversaw the draft. And we got two. Who do we have on the line, Creek? New York Mike. This is a guy that, friend of Bob Valvano's, friend of mine, that really understands the gaming aspect issue, and he's a horse guy.
Hello, New York Mike.
How you doing? I hope I get this right. Dan McAllister and Mike Pratt.
Dan Issel.
Dan McAllister.
Yeah, that's what I said. Dan McAllister and Mike Pratt.
He can't cash any checks that way, but that's okay. He's got enough money.
That ain't his name?
No. Yeah, it's his name. He'll go by that now.
All right, whatever I said. Okay, thanks. This is the first time I heard you two guys on there. I've been in this room for 2 years. I broke my legs 2 years ago, and I've been in this room, and I've been, you know, talking to Drew or Bob or Nick, and I got a horse for you for the Derby. You ready?
I'm ready. I can always use a horse.
The first name is Rebel, and I really, really can't remember the second, but it ain't hard if the first name is Rebel. There's no other horses with the first name Rebel.
Okay. I think it's Rebel McAllister.
Rebel, it's, I thought it was Rebel, Johnny Yuma Rebel.
What do you like about him, New York Mike?
Well, first of all, my brother called me. He said this is the first time he saw a horse from Ireland. And me and my brother were half Italian, half Irish. And he said, all my money's going on Rebel. So I'm going to go with my brother because I can't get out to do anything. So he's going to put it in for me up there. Who do you guys like?
Well, you know, there's a... I'm pulling for the favorite, who will be Essential Quality, because he's trained by Brad Cox, and Brad Cox is a Louisville guy, and we like to see our native sons do well. I think Todd Pletcher has a horse that won the Florida Derby. I think he'll be tough as well. But I'm going to have to do some research. I'm not familiar with Rebel. I'll do some research and see where he fits in the Derby picture.
Isn't that horse you like 1-2?
No, he won't be 1-2. There'll be 20 horses in the Derby, so you'll get better odds in 1-2. He will go off the favorite though.
So if Rebel is 30-1 today, he's going to be more on May 1st.
Yeah, yeah. Especially since we don't know what his second name is. He probably isn't real popular. You might get 100-1 on him.
I hope you're right. And you know what else? I hope he wins.
Me too, New York Mike.
I think I might put $2 down on that horse just to hope. At 100-1, what the heck, huh?
Wait a minute. Who said put $2 on him?
I did, Mike Pratt. I mean, I'm taking your tip, and I'm going to put two to win.
Mike Pratt, I talk to you a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Doing good, man.
Good. The other guy I know too?
Oh, yeah. You know Dan Issel, yeah.
Okay. This is the first time I heard you two guys on there. How long you been on?
Second week.
I caught you at the right time in the beginning. You will have my Irish-Italian luck with you.
I appreciate that, and I'm going to look up the first break we have. I'm going to look up Rebel something, an Irish horse that's going to run.
Rookie at Rebel. He's from Ireland.
Okay. Yeah, going to run in the Kentucky Derby. I got it, New York, Mike.
All right. Hey, you guys sound good, and good rest. Good luck for the rest of your time there.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike.
Take care, man.
He calls the Bobby V show also, and he's called on Fast Break Friday that V and I have done for years.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, the New York connection, the Valvanos.
Yeah.
I don't think he's a Paisan, but he might be. But you know,
he's that, Irish.
Yeah, that well, part Italian, part Irish. Does that make you really a Paisan?
I'm not sure.
I think that means you're neither, because you're not fully Italian or fully Irish.
Well, you know, okay, Crean, I'll give you that, man. I'll give you that. So
I've had Issel pronounced a lot of different ways. That's the first time it's been pronounced McAllister.
Crean, have we heard from Borzello? We're wearing this Borzello thing out, but he's hit on some really nice topics. So have we talked about what he thought about Calipari in the transfer portal?
We did talk about that. There's also clips, though, of him talking about Louisville and Indiana still filling their open assistant coaching positions, and also on him talking about Noah Locke.
Okay, let's do those, and then we're waiting for Kyle Tucker. We're going to get him in the back half hour. So let's run that.
Indiana, I think, a little bit easier to answer. The name kind of buzzing right now is Yasir Rosemont. Former Alabama assistant, Oregon assistant, Georgia assistant, really good recruiter, really connected, especially in the South. I don't know when that's going to be made official. He seems to be the leader based on everyone I'm talking to. Louisville, there's no leader. I mean, it's kind of the easy answer, but it seems like they're being patient. They're taking their time. And you and I spoke about this on your podcast, but there's really no rush right now. You know, there's no April period that you have to get somebody on the road for. You know, Louisville's already landed a couple of transfers. They're rounding out their roster. It's not like they need three assistants to make 30 phone calls a day to transfers. So I think Chris Mack can afford to be patient in his search for a third assistant. There's very few rumors and names out there right now for that spot.
Well, the assistant coaches are so important. People don't really realize what an assistant coach actually does. I mean, they see him sitting on the bench all dressed up, and that's all good. But, boy, how important are they in the relationship, the culture building of a team? And so it is it's an important position. Mike Woodson filled his staff, Crean, pretty quickly with the IU guy.
Yeah,
Dane Fife. Kept the other assistant.
Yeah, retained Kenya Hunter, who was the guy that Louisville wanted, and he still has that one spot open trying to figure out who that last guy. It sounds like he's going to be the former Alabama assistant World Wide West guy. He has all World Wide West ties, so that'll be interesting.
Oh, really? Who's that?
I'm blanking on his name. Borzello said in the clip it was Yaiv something. Hold on.
Well, like Crean does our research.
Here was perimeter shooting. You know, they ranked toward the bottom.
Crean's trying to find that.
Oh, they've already lost Sam Hauser. Indiana, I think, a little bit easier to answer. The name kind of buzzing right now is Yasir Rosemont.
Yasir Rosemont, there it is.
Oh, really? Yes. Never heard. He was at Alabama?
Yes, at Alabama and Oregon.
I'll be daggone.
The best dude spots he's been at.
Well, with Thad Matta up there to assist Woody as he breaks in the college ranks, which, you know, he's making a big swing from the NBA and where they have scouts and player personnel guys that make the decision, don't they,
right.
Dan? Yep. The coach doesn't get involved in that.
No, because, you know, the coach doesn't have time. I mean, he's busy coaching the team. Now, after the season is over, between the end of the season and the draft, the coach will try to familiarize himself as much as he can with what's going on. But you've got people that you're paying good money to be out there scouting all year long. And so if you don't listen to their recommendations, then it doesn't make much sense to be using them. But usually the coach is not even in the top two or three decision makers.
A funny quick story before we take a break and get Kyle Tucker. Ed Badger was on the original staff at the Hornets with Dick Harter. He was, and of course, you probably know Ed, longtime NBA guy, coach at Cincinnati, just a real character, good guy. And so we are all gathered in Charlotte, like drafts on Thursday. So we come in on Monday and we start discussing this and talking about that. And, of course, as you said, the coaches don't have time during the season to really analyze this draft. Yet Harder was one of those guys that had to come in and put his two cents in, and he was never happy with what the scouts or the director of player personnel, who was Gene Littles at the time, had to say about guys we had spent the whole year watching. And we had given him tapes on these guys, but he never liked anybody. And I'll never forget the day of the draft. It is, Dick is still talking about guys and who he liked and trades, and he didn't like any of the guys on the team, but you couldn't trade them. We were an expansion team. How are we going to trade guys, you know? So Ed Badger sat there in this meeting. It got real quiet after Dick had decided that he didn't like the last combination of our draft choices. He goes, Badger goes, you know, you guys are wasting a lot of time, because I've learned a long time ago that in this draft, there are no passes. Everybody's got to take somebody. So let's figure this out. You know, how about words of wisdom from a sage?
You got to make a pick. You can't pass.
No passes. No passes. And I always thought that was great.
Mike, I just looked at the top 28 horses on the Derby leaderboard. Known Agenda is the horse of Pletcher's that I was trying to think of a minute ago. But New York, Mike, I don't see anybody named Rebel. So I think he might have a hard time getting that bet down.
I mean, he gets a pretty good odds then, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you should get all you want, all you can eat on that horse, right? So Pletcher's got a nice horse. And what about the horse that just won over in Arkansas?
Superstock.
That's a nice horse.
Yeah, it is a nice horse, but he got the perfect setup.
Sure,
he did. In the Arkansas Derby.
Small field.
Yeah,
smaller
field. Cato and Concert Tour went out way too fast. I think the first quarter was 22 and something. But you're right. Usually there's a pretty fast pace in the Derby, too. There's usually a horse or two that have no shot of winning. But the owner wants to be able to say my horse was in front after the first half mile of the Kentucky Derby, so he'll probably get a good pace to run at. The problem in a 20 horse field, if you're a come from behind horse, you've got to get really lucky. Like the year that Street Sense came right up the rail, never had a horse in his path. You got to have a lucky trip like that. I like to bet the horses that lay right off the pace. And don't have to have the perfect trip to win the game.
So you're done evaluating now for this Derby.
So you're capable
of switching on me?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
At what point do you have to lock it in by?
2 minutes before they run the race.
I will say this, though. Since they moved to the point system with the Derby, you see a lot less of those horses that just go at a breakneck speed and set a really hot pace. It seems like in the last, 7-8 years or so, there's more horses that go wire to wire or up near stalking near the front than there used to be.
Yeah, you're right. Last year with Authenticity went wire to wire. And that's what I say. It's tough to be a deep closer in a 20-horse field to get up in time. But, I'll probably switch 4 or 5 times. But I am really hoping Essential Quality. This has nothing to do with the gambling part of it. But Brad Cox is first of all, he's a really nice guy. He's a big Kentucky
Middletown
fan.
Middletown, Kentucky.
Yeah.
And a Kentucky fan.
Yeah. And so I really would like to see a Kentucky guy win the Derby. It's never happened before.
All right, I will say this. I have found a horse named Cockney Rebel, who is an Irish horse, but the key word was an Irish horse. Because he won a couple stakes races, but that was all the way back in 2000. And he actually died back in March of this year. But he was from Ireland and had Rebel in the name.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think they've ever had a dead horse win the Derby, so that probably won't happen.
I bet on some that I thought were dead when they ran. I mean, they ran like they were dead, right? Oh, Lordy. Well, let's take a break. We're going to come back with Kyle Tucker. and talk a little with the athletic and talk a little college basketball, a little portal talk of within college basketball, and maybe where some of the local teams might be headed next year, what the SEC is doing. I mean, the SEC is loading up, man. There's a lot of action in the SEC with transfers. So we'll get back, Dan, with Kyle Tucker. And Crean, you'll take us back, and you'll call him on the phone and be nice to him, and don't treat him like a dead horse. This is Sports Talk with Dan Issel, Mike Pratt, 680-1057.
Four tops.
Temps.
The temptations.
Yeah, tempting temptations.
I remember my our second year in Kentucky. I roomed with Case.
Yeah.
And he had this ain't too proud to beg. he wore that record.
He could sing that song.
He must have played that 10,000 times our sophomore year.
Ain't too proud to beg, sweet darling.
That's
right?
It. Yeah, that's it. Welcome back to Sports Talk with Mike Pratt and Dan Issel on Louisville ESPN 680 and 105.7. Boy, did I screw that up.
Well, you got through it, you know. Hey, listen, we had a texter that put us hip to the tip on New York Mike's horse.
Okay.
It's called Rebel's Romance. It's passing on the Derby and looking at the Belmont.
Okay.
Rebel's Romance.
I believe that might be the horse that won the UAE Derby in
Dubai.
Yeah. Because I know, and those people own Godolphin. If it's the same horse I'm thinking about, it's Godolphin, and they own Essential Quality, so they've already got the favorite in the Derby, so it wouldn't make sense that they'd send that horse to run in the Derby.
Brad Cox, you introduced me to him a couple Saturdays ago. Great. Really nice fella.
Yep.
And made it a point to say that he grew up in Middletown and was a Kentucky fan. And, of course, I knew the name. I bet on his horses.
Right.
Sometimes I've cursed his horses, and sometimes I've went to the win ticket window. And nice guy.
Yeah.
And is a good horse.
Man. And his go-to jock is Florent Giroux, who also lives in Louisville. Now, Florent is from France and has had a very good start to his riding career here in the United States. They have this weekend coming up. They have one of the top, or probably the top, filly and mare in the country, a filly named Monomoy Girl, who won the Oaks a couple years ago. And she's running in a race at Oaklawn Park. And Swiss Skydiver, mm-hmm. who was 3-year-old champion filly, is going to run against her. And so that's going to be a heck of a horse race. But the old owners sold Monomoy Girl this past November at the Fasig Tipton sale. And Spendthrift Farm and their partners bought her for $9.5 million. I think she's won 14 out of 16 races, has been champion filly a couple of years. But it was really ironic that, you know, usually you pay that much for a horse that has accomplished as much as she has. You take her straight to the breeding shed. But they decided to keep her in training one more year. And so that race Saturday ought to be a good one, Monomoy Girl.
I bet on both those horses previously, okay? So I didn't know. I had missed that race coming up. Sounds like that could be a good one. Now, a texter. Well, I mean, these texters are great.
They're sharp.
Oh, yeah, they are.
Yep.
It says, yes, Dan, that's the correct horse.
Okay.
All right. Your background.
That's the one who won the UAE Derby. Yeah, yeah.
So given your horse racing background, your love for that particular sport, your biggest disappointment in a horse that you put a few shekels on?
Well, the biggest.
You always remember those horses you don't cash.
Yeah, but that's what the game's about. I mean, it's fun. It's not, to me, it's not like gambling where you go to slot machine or to the blackjack table. You can do your research and you can come up with a winner. The most disappointing horse I ever had was the late Tom Gentry, and I owned a Secretariat filly. She was out of Secretariat's first crop, and she won a small stake at Hollywood Park, ran second in the Hollywood Oaks. She went to Del Mar, and Bill Shoemaker rode her the first time that she ran at Del Mar. And she was so far out of it, Mike. Going down the backside, you thought, oh, he's going to ease her. This is embarrassing. The first time the great Bill Shoemaker rides one of my horses, she's not even going to finish the race. Well, she came flying and finished third, got beat a couple lengths, and that was a prep for the Del Mar Oaks. And so Bill Shoemaker didn't ride her in the Del Mar Oaks. He was riding a horse called Spectacular Bid at the time that you might have heard of. And so we got another jockey, and I won't mention his name, but we told him now, you know, you got to stay, let her fall out of there and stay way behind and come running. And that race was an eighth of a mile longer. And so this brilliant jockey that replaced Bill Shoemaker, going into the first turn, he had her four lengths off the lead. And she was four lengths off the lead at the start, and she was four lengths off at the end. And so that was my biggest disappointment in horse racing.
Bad coaching. With that, let's welcome in Kyle Tucker of The Athletic, a guy that can – tell us what we need to know about this crazy transfer portal. The SEC kind of looks like it's going to be really tough next year, Kyle, huh?
Yeah, the league is loaded up. I mean, you've got it's interesting because you've got a couple coaches, one in particular at Arkansas, Eric Musselman, who's been sort of on the leading edge of the transfer movement for a while now, even as you've had, even with the traditional rules. He's going back to Nevada, even he built that team into a power out there with a lot of transfers. Some of them, you know, traditional transfers where they had to sit out a year, and some of them as grad transfers. But if you look at how he built those rosters, they were heavily transfer. And then he got to Arkansas, and obviously there's a much different sort of recruiting pedigree there, and it's much more attractive destination to high-end recruits. And so now, you know, Musselman he just guided them in his second year to the Elite Eight. He's able to get, you know, four and five star, high school recruits and mix those guys with the veteran transfers, which he did this year. I mean, one of the key players for Arkansas this year was Justin Smith from Indiana. So they've been doing that for a while, and they've loaded up again. They're getting a bunch of high end transfers yet again, and mixing them in with quality high school recruits. And I think that's what you're going to see John Calipari start to do now that the transfers are going to be wide open, where there is no sit out, and you don't just have to take a grad transfer, which is usually going to be coming from a mid major. You can go get a guy from a big time recruit who maybe just wasn't happy with his role at one of the high major programs, and get him after his freshman year or his sophomore year. And he comes right in and plays, and you know more what you're getting. I mean, I think for Cal, as we sort of see that shift, he's still going to take the really high-end high school kids if he can get them, but he's going to start to mix in these guys that he knows what he's getting, that he's not teaching, you know, remedial basketball to his entire roster for every summer and early fall. And so we're going to see Cal do that. He's already taken one guy. I mean, you know, when is the last time Kentucky had a guy on the roster like Kellen Grady, who's got 4,000 plus minutes played in Division One and 2,000 points scored in Division One? I mean, that alone. Davion Mintz, if he comes back as a sixth-year player, is a guy who's got 100 starts in college basketball and almost 1,000 points under his belt. That's going to change sort of the mix for Kentucky. But it's happening around the country, and it's happening around the league. LSU just got a really quality point guard, Pinson, from in the conference at Missouri. Auburn just got Walker Kessler, who I think is going to be great, a seven-footer who's super skilled, who didn't play a ton last year as a freshman at North Carolina. He's going to be really good for Bruce Pearl at Auburn. So the league's really loading up. Alabama taking a bunch of transfers as well, and they're good ones. The SEC is going to be a gauntlet next year.
Kyle, it really isn't even legal yet. I think the NCAA is going to vote on it in the coming week, but obviously everybody feels it's going to pass. Do you think this will be permanent, or is this just a 1 or 2 year deal experiment?
I think it'll be permanent. I think because it's kind of in my mind, it feels like it's the minimum thing that the NCAA can do in terms of sort of player rights. You know, we're in an era where there's a major movement, kind of an awakening of the athletes that, hey, this isn't amateur athletics. It isn't. I mean, you can kid yourself and say that it is, but, I mean, we know now that coaches, that programs, that the NCAA as a collective is making millions and billions of dollars on this product that these college kids are putting out. You know, and you can argue how much of the value is in the uniform and how much of the value is in the athlete, but I think it's a mix of both, and there is value in the athlete. And they want a piece of that, and I think while the NCAA tries to get its head around what to do about compensation and or name, image, likeness, just let these kids, you know, profit from their autograph or their, you know, their photo or whatever, let them be in advertisement. That's a monster of a thing to tackle, but the minimum that the NCAA can do is give these athletes freedom of movement, because the coaches have freedom of movement. They can recruit you and lure you and promise you, sign you this week and leave next week. Or the head coach can have the lead recruiter, you know, get you on the hook, signed, sealed, and delivered, and then fire him the next week. I mean, all of that can happen, and you don't have freedom of movement. So I do think, because it is the minimum that you can do for the players, and there is such a swell of support to have it happen, that it's going to happen and it's going to stay that way. And in terms of, like, it's not official yet, I think we've seen it, the strength in numbers at this point with 1,300 guys in the transfer portal. The genie's out of the bottle, and there's no putting it back in. You know, there's so many guys have transferred on the idea that this has essentially been promised to them that it is going to change, that now it has to change.
We're talking with Kyle Tucker of The Athletic, and you need to get that, Dan, if you haven't. We talked about it. It's a terrific publication,
right,
and a lot of quality writers like Kyle. How about this? I'm all in on when a coach leaves, or as you mentioned, maybe it is an assistant, that player has some freedom of movement. I'm all in on that. But saying that, Kyle, this thing is going to do damage to the mid-major or the low majors. I mean, you're taking guys that they spent time and effort, money to develop and polish up. You're taking them away from these guys who did maybe not the dirty work, but the legwork in this development. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, look, that's going to happen, but you've also got to consider that it's going to that the river is going to flow both directions, because you're going to have guys that go to Kentucky and to these Power Five schools who were maybe a big deal recruit, but they're you know, they can't elbow their way into the rotation, or they get there and they realize maybe I'm not all that I was cracked up to be, and they're going to go down a level. There's only so many spots. I mean, that's the other thing. There's only so many roster spots available. You know, Kentucky, every guy that's has a pulse that's gone into the portal has been, you know, linked to Kentucky. They can't all come to Kentucky. they can't all come to, you know, the SEC. There's only so many roster spots. And so when that all shakes out, you're also going to end up some of the diamonds in the rough that the mid-majors found and developed, yes, they will then go on to the bigger stage, and that'll hurt them. But then some of those guys are going to filter back down from the big leagues to the smaller leagues, and so I think it'll all kind of ultimately, maybe not immediately, but I think in the long run, it'll somewhat kind of come out in the wash. And then and my counter argument even to the idea of, well, it'll hurt the mid-major is, but if it's about the kid, then, you know, it doesn't really bother me that much. Like, if you're this, you know, diamond in the rough and you go and you wanted to go to Kentucky, but they didn't think you were good enough. And frankly, you weren't good enough initially, but you go to mid-major XYZ and they develop you and you get good enough. And you think you're ready to be on that stage, and you want to go put yourself on that stage because it may help you reach your dream of playing in the NBA or playing, you know, wherever professionally, or just playing on that stage as a college player because you want to play on that stage because that was what you always aspired to. You should be able to do that, and you know, and so it doesn't break my heart too bad for these mid-major programs. Especially now that you know what you're dealing with, you know what the rules are, and it's all going to come out in the wash. And it's always been the case that the big boys eat, and the and yeah. The others have to sort of take their scraps. I mean, that's a tale as old as time.
Do you see, in talking with these coaches, and you have numerous contacts within the coaching fraternity and the sports writing fraternity, coaches, teams come back and really try hard to get a kid who's in the portal that they may have recruited hard and finish maybe second or third with one of these big-time name players? Do you see that as a reliance by the coaches as they evaluate the players?
What are you saying? Are you asking if there's going to be a lot of cases where you sort of re-recruit a guy you already had a relationship with?
Yeah, I think the correlation between what you've done recruiting previously and what you see the player developing, do you see schools leaning toward those type of guys because they have an in, previous in?
Yeah, I would get – I mean, yeah, it's always about relationships, and I would think certainly that in some of those cases that'll be true. But, I mean, you know, then there are others where it's just you never had a reason to be involved before. I mean, Kellen Grady was not at any point on Kentucky's radar as a recruit. Probably got on their radar after they faced him in Boise, Idaho, in the NCAA tournament a few years ago, and he played pretty well. But that was just a case where he was a guy who was good enough to be recruited by Kentucky, and so a new connection was formed. I think a lot of times these players and sort of the camps around them, whether it be their parents or a former coach, they're going to reach out to these schools and say, hey, how about now? You weren't interested in him in high school, but how about now? But I do think in some other cases where it's kind of more of a high-end guy, there may be some already established relationship. We certainly have seen that in football. I mean, there have been a handful of cases now where, you know, guys that Vince Marrow recruited for Kentucky, they end up going somewhere else initially, you know, and a year or two into it, they're not happy at that place, and they end up back with Kentucky and Vince here. You know, Wandale Robinson leaves, you know, they think they have him here at Kentucky, and he goes to Nebraska, you know, a couple years later, he's right back here in Lexington. And so I definitely think you can see some scenarios where that would benefit you, yeah.
Kyle, how do the coaches feel about it? It looks to me like it's just doubled their work. Now they're not only having to recruit kids coming out of high school or the AAU programs, but having to recruit kids coming out of the portal. But is that the case, or are they just happy to be able to replenish their rosters?
I think there's a little bit of both. There's definitely more work. I think it's especially in this sort of initial frenzy. But I think what we'll see is probably – you know, almost like the Alabama football model where they've got this army of support staff. I think we'll see basketball staffs grow, especially at, you know, some of the powers where they have the money to do that. I think, you know, if you're Kentucky and you talk about gold standard and all that, you better be building a, you know, essentially a team whose job it is exclusive of the full-time assistants. I mean a separate sort of support team where you're maintaining a database and you're keeping an eye, you're scouting players in college basketball all year long. I mean, that's the next frontier is in terms of getting an edge is, and NFL teams do this. You know, you have scouts on NFL teams that are watching preseason games to see if there's a guy that somebody's going to cut this week from their roster that you could see filling some specialized role for your team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's crazy to, the way the scouting works. And I think if you're a smart basketball program at the top of the food chain with the money and resources to do it, you begin to invest in that now. So and take some of that off your full-time assistant staff. You want a group of people who are bringing to Calipari and to his three assistants, here's our list. Here's who we should be going after. Here's who you need to take a look at and decide if you want to, you know, if they become available, you know, you start looking at, you know, guys that were highly recruited who maybe aren't playing as big a role as they'd like because of who else is on the roster. But you look at their film, you look at their advanced stats and go, man, if this guy had a bigger role or if he played in our system, he could thrive. And so I think it's more work. But I think that there's also the benefit of, I mean, with the even as much better, I think, as the evaluation process is for high school basketball players than football. Football is a crapshoot. You have 4- and 5-star guys that bust all the time. In basketball, the high-end guys are usually at least good college players. But even still, there are misses. Recruiting college players allows you to know that they can do it at that level, that they can, they have, they will do it at that level. And I do think that probably a lot of coaches will be happy to know that some of their additions at least are known quantities. Like this guy can play for us. He will play well at this level. And so I think it's a mixed bag in terms of, yeah, they're going to be a lot busier, but I think they'll know more about what they're actually getting when they're getting these transfers.
I think you're spot on because I think Kentucky and other schools like that have already invested some money and they may invest more. But before we let you go, Kyle, give us 2 or 3 names of guys we should be watching down the stretch here. Of course, I say down the stretch. I think the portal is open for business clear till September maybe. But give us a few names that you think we ought to keep our eye on for potentially becoming a Wildcat.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the big name that's out there right now is Marcus Carr, you know, point guard from Minnesota. He's a guy who 2 years ago led or was second in the Big Ten in assists, I think 6.5 a game. This past year they needed him to score more, and he did. And he was, I think, third in the Big Ten in scoring, 19.5 points a game. So he can score. He can facilitate. He's got that ability to get by his man, which was really missing this year, to beat somebody on the bounce. That's what you're going to be looking for. Like, Kentucky has got to get a point guard, and I think they like Nolan Hickman, but I don't think they can go into this season with another freshman who's not a sure thing right out of the gate as their only option at point guard. They have got to have a point guard that they know can make plays. And so, you know, Carr would be a great option if he decides to pull out of the draft, and right now it doesn't look like he'd be drafted, so it stands to reason he would come back to college, and if he does, he's going to likely transfer. I'd put him pretty high, if not at the very top of the wish list. The other option is the kid out of Illinois, who, you know, he's not really a point guard, but he's a guy who can score. I mean, they definitely need to add guys who can get buckets. and so, you know, that's another option, Adam Miller. And then I think you also look at guys that aren't yet in the portal. I mean, that you mentioned, you said the portal's going to be open for business until probably September, certainly probably until July. There are going to be more names that come into the portal, for sure. I mean, Mac McClung is a guy that just came, looks like he's either going to go pro or transfer from Texas Tech. I don't necessarily think McClung makes a lot of sense for Kentucky, but guys like that who are high-level, you know, power conference players are steadily getting added to that portal. You know, I know that Kentucky at least has its eye on a couple guys who aren't already in the portal, whose people have reached out. I don't know those names. I just know that there are some names. But, you know, if I'm trying to look around the landscape and see who would be perfect for Kentucky, the dream to me for Kentucky would be the kid from Colorado, McKinley Wright. He is an unbelievable player, I think a 3- or 4-time All-Pac-12 player, who I don't think really has NBA, a chance to be drafted in the NBA this year. He's already played 4 years, but because of that 3 year, that also opens up in this transfer portal the opportunity to get these super seniors. I mean, guys who've been 3- and 4-year starters playing their fifth or sixth year in college. And talk about flipping the script for Kentucky, going from all teenage, you know, freshmen to guys who are 21, 22, 23 years old in your backcourt. I think that is ideal, certainly, for Kentucky.
Kyle Tucker of The Athletic, we appreciate your time. We'd love to have you come back as this whole portal thing stays open and materializes. Thanks for your time, buddy.
Thanks, Kyle.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Thanks, guys.
There you go. I mean, he's on top of his game, and he understands this. I had a couple other questions, but we have to get him back. and because I think it's so interesting from both sides, the player side and the coaching side.
You know, I follow Colorado because being from Denver, and my son went to see you, and Chad Boyle's done a great job with that program. But he's absolutely right. This Wright kid, I don't know if he's good enough to play in the NBA, but he is a heck of a college player.
Well, that's what they need, because the freshman, as Kyler was talking about, Nolan Hickman, I believe is his name, he's going to need to mature, to ripen a little bit for that spot.
See, I don't like the portal, but I do like the fact that Kentucky is going to have some veteran players on the roster and not 10 McDonald All-Americans.
I think I read Cal as trying to change that whole thing, and it's not going to be an easy process or a fast process. But I think if I read the picture right, he's trying with this stuff, and he sees everybody. I mean, when they allow these kids to go to the NBA directly, everything's going to change. So we have a full show tomorrow.
Who do we have? We'll continue our Kentucky Colonels ABA remembrance. Thanks for David Vance. And don't forget, tomorrow at 10:30, the doctor will make a house call.
Doctor? My doctor?
Dr. J.
Dr. J. How about that? That's special, man. And the second hour, we got John Clay to talk a little bit more Kentucky sports of the Lexington Herald Leader. So, Dan, we'll see you tomorrow. Unless something happens that we don't know about now, we will be here at 10 o'clock for Sports Talk with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt on ESPN 680-1057.
Exmark makes the mowers that care for the lawns that set the stage for the backyard life. As the commercial mowers more landscape pros trust, Exmark mowers get you on and off the lawn without compromising cut quality, comfort, or reliability. Exmark, official mowers of the backyard life, starting at $29.99. Learn about the available finance offers and check them out today at The Mower Shop, 7400 Preston Highway, Louisville, Kentucky, 502-969-6433.
Make your life better with a new job at UPS. Join Team Louisville as a warehouse worker, earn $14.50 per hour plus a $175 weekly bonus for some shifts. Search and apply now at upsjobs.com/Louisville. That's upsjobs.com/Louisville.
Bet Rivers Sportsbook has supercharged its iOS app. Download the update today from the Apple App Store and see the difference for yourself. Must be 21 or over to play. Playable only in Indiana. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-9-WITH-IT.